an expansive new testing partnership for the state, contact tracers getting to work soon, plus Woody Myers' small business support plans, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 1st, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana officials announced a partnership that will dramatically expand the state's COVID-19 testing capacity. OptumServe Health Services will set up 20 testing sites around the state within the next week, with 50 total sites within 2 weeks. State Health Department Chief Medical Officer Dr. Lindsay Weaver says anyone with symptoms of COVID-19 or who has had close contact with a symptomatic person can get tested without a doctor's order.
And once all 50 sites are open, as many as 6,600 Hoosiers can be tested per day.
OptumServe aims to test 100,000 people within the first 30 days. Governor Eric Holcomb says patients at OptumServe sites should get results within 48 hours.
And it's free. You're going to have to show, if you have insurance, you're going to have to show insurance. But you won't be turned away if you don't have insurance.
The state says the partnership with OptumServe is on a month-to-month basis and costs nearly $18 million, though much of that will be paid for through federal funding. How big is this for Indiana in its fight against COVID-19? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Now, I wanted to say right at the top of the show that maybe the biggest story of the week is that Governor Holcomb, just minutes before we started taping, announced the roadmap for Indiana to start to reopen businesses and parts of the economy. We will talk about that in great detail because there are a lot of details on next week's program. But Mike O'Brien, to this topic, what kind of impact can this testing partnership have?
Well, it has to have a big one. And we can't put off talking about what the governor announced on Friday, because this is a very important part of it. We're transitioning into a period of managing this crisis, where on the front end, stay at home and keeping slowing the spread of this virus, maintaining capacity in the healthcare system to take care of the sickest people was the priority. As we transition into a gradual reopening of the economy and these communities, that is going to depend heavily on testing. It's going to depend heavily on contact tracing and understanding who has this, who might have it, and managing how this virus travels through a community and removing it where you can to minimize the risk as much as possible, to permit this economic activity and kind of quasi-normal life to continue. So this is a huge piece of it. It ramps some testing significantly. It's got to be paired with contact tracing, which was another announcement this week. Unless those two pieces are successful, we're not going to be able to open the way that the governor wants to over the next 2 months.
Ann Delaney, there have been obviously a lot of criticisms about a lack of adequate testing capacity in Indiana and across the country. But we've already started to see that testing capacity in Indiana specifically rise significantly just over the last few days. And that's even before this massive new program with OptumServe gets up and running. So will this get us to where we need to be?
Well, nobody knows whether it's going to get us where we need to be. We do know that we were promised 6,000 a week or 6,000 a day weeks ago, and we may get there with this group. I find it interesting that not only is this a no-bid contract, but this entity that is doing the testing is a large contributor to the governor. Those kinds of crony approaches to where these monies from the federal government go, I think, are worrisome. It may be that this is the best agency to do the testing. I don't know. But I would feel better if they hadn't been involved in giving $10,000 to the governor in his reelection campaign. So those kinds of things worry me a little bit. And that's the case here. And again, we have a no-bid contract on either one of these entities, both of whom are contributors to the governor.
Yeah, Nikki Kelly, there weren't a lot of details about this OptumServe contract given out earlier this week when the governor and his team announced this partnership. Do a lot more questions need to be asked from folks like you and me, quite frankly, about how this all happened in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I look forward to seeing the actual contracts. Right now, we're just going off details the administration is saying. Now, I will say this. I think we all acknowledge that we're in the middle of a crisis area, and people have been saying we need more testing, more testing, more testing. Right. So I do understand them not doing the 45-day long normal procurement process. And I do know for the contact tracing contract, at least, they did approach, I think, 6 or 7 different entities and got proposals. So maybe not a formal process, but a little better. But some things are really unknown about that contract too. I'm still trying to clarify for sure if those employees will all live in Indiana.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the contact tracing here in just a moment. But before we get to that, John Schwanes, I think one of the most instructive parts of this partnership, to me at least, if we're going by what the governor and his team announced, is that OptumServe is providing its own supplies, its own PPE, its own personnel, its own test kits, and its own lab, which means all of these numbers we're talking about in terms of testing capacity will simply be added on to what the state is already doing, right?
Yeah, I think that is right. And keep in mind here, OptumServe is not some fly-by-night that just, some entrepreneur said a week ago, hey, we could get into the business of testing and make a lot of money. Let's go get a high school chemistry kit. This is an outfit that's been around. It's affiliated with UnitedHealthcare, which is a giant nationally. I think it provides nearly half of revenues, in fact, for UnitedHealthcare as a subsidiary. And as far as the vetting process, and as far as any political connections, I guess I'm not defending. I always would favor, certainly under normal conditions or circumstances, a very transparent process. But let's concede to the point that these aren't normal times. But Gavin Newsom, the Democratic governor of California, announced this week that that the state of California was also entering into a partnership with the same entity to do 80 sites of testing versus the 50 in Indiana. So I have not looked at campaign contributions to Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom's campaign, but it's not unheard of course, for large conglomerates to, offer both a little something to both sides.
Yeah, if you're smart, you give it all around. All right. Well, it's already been mentioned a couple times here, but Indiana will launch a privately run call center to take the lead in the state on contact tracing for COVID-19. Contact tracing being interviewing positive patients and finding out who they've been around to help track the spread of the virus. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box calls contact tracing a critical part of fighting the ongoing pandemic.
We must be able to test individuals quickly and isolate them if they are positive, and then contact individuals who have been in close contact with them and let them know that they must quarantine themselves for 14 days.
All Hoosiers who test positive for COVID-19 will get an email and text asking them to contact the call center. If they don't do so within 4 hours, a call center employee will call them to develop that contact history. Box says all information gathered at the call center will be shared with local health departments.
And then be there as that local resource for individuals that are now isolating and quarantining.
500 people will be hired at the call center and given video training on how to contact trace. And Delaney, Dr. Box and state officials acknowledge that 500 is just what they're starting with, but is 500 really going to be enough?
Well, I'm not a medical expert, Brandon, but those who are medical experts say that for a state the size of Indiana, 1,000 is the minimum, and in a pandemic, it doubles. So 2,000 would be what they would recommend to do the tracing adequately in Indiana. So in answer to your question, the answer is no, it's not enough. The doctor is correct. Obviously, we've got to find people who have been in close contact with those who have it in order to contain the virus. And you know, if we're going to do this, we have to take a page out of the books of countries, not just states, but countries who have done this effectively. And when you do it effectively, you've got to jump in with both feet on all of these things, on testing, on stay-at-home orders, on tracing, on all of them. And we're doing it a little bit at a time, and that's simply not adequate.
Mike O'Brien, Dr. Box was asked that very question, is 500 really enough? And she said, we don't want to overhire on the front end. And normally that would be a sound fiscal strategy as you're being a steward of state money. But is this, in this circumstance, is this a time when you really should be erring on the side of over-hiring? Hey, Mike, we're having trouble hearing you. Can you make sure you're not muted there?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No problem.
Well, I think they can. I think they can ramp this up pretty quick if they need to. And there's examples where we've added resources. The 211 system is a great example. On a heavy day, the heavy volume day in the past, they were getting 1,000 calls a day. Now they're getting 25,000. And so the state came in and leveraged resources from other places to manage that capacity. So I think this is a great start as it's going to grow because the virus is going to continue to spread. They're going to continue to discover more and more positive cases. And then identify the contacts that those patients that test positive were in contact with, and so as that happens on that graph, as it continues to grow, they can scale this type of program up, and we'll have to.
Nikki Kelly, as we started to hear about today, the governor's announcement about the state starting to open up, and as they've been saying for a few days now, as we increase the testing capacity, which we just talked about, we are naturally going to see a lot more cases. More cases means a lot more things to trace, and especially as we start to open up, potentially a lot more people to contact. So is 500 seem enough for you?
I mean, it seems low to me. I know Massachusetts, who is pretty much our similar population, started with hiring 1,000 people, so that gives you just an idea. I think it's clear that they are going to have to hire more if they really want this contact tracing to work. And frankly, that's the only way we get away from these blanket restrictions is if we can pinpoint quickly, a person before they spread it to, 50 more and isolate them and maybe their immediate family and coworkers.
Yeah, John Schwannis, to that point, exactly. We know how important testing is, obviously, to get our hands around this problem, but contact tracing seems to be just about as important if we're talking about getting to some sort of new normal in society, right?
I think you're right. It is probably one of the oldest tools in the public health toolbox. Contact tracing is as old almost as that profession, that field. And it is powerful, and that's why we're seeing states loosen the purse strings with a willingness to hire these large numbers of people. Now, is it enough? Probably not. Ann cited some numbers. You could point also to the National Association of County and City Health Officials. They say you need 30 per 100,000. So if you do the math on that, Indiana should have 2,000 versus 500. But a lot of the reason that states are doing this nationally is it's maybe a cautionary tale for the future. We've seen tremendous cuts in the past few decades across the country in state and local health budgets. And so one of the reasons we're having to hire 500, 1,000, whatever states across the country now is because we had neglected, fiscal neglect, these agencies for a period of time back to the 80s, even the 70s. And that's we're sort of paying the fiddler now.
Yeah, because to that point, John, up till now in Indiana, contact tracing has been going on, but it's been happening mostly at the local level, and they clearly need a lot more help. So time now.
Because we rank 48th in terms of funding for public health in Indiana.
Yes, we do. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Eismiller email and text alerts. This week's question, should the state hire more than 500 people to do contact tracing in the fight against COVID-19? A yes or B no. Last week's question, who will be the Republican nominee for Attorney General? Overwhelmingly, you believe the incumbent, Curtis Hill, will be renominated, 69% of you. 14% say it's the newcomer, Nate Harder. 7% say it's John Westerkamp. And 10% believe that someone else might join that race. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana Democratic gubernatorial candidate Woody Myers announced proposals Wednesday to provide more state-level support for Hoosier small businesses suffering from the COVID-19 crisis, but Myers' plans were in some areas a little short on specifics. Woody Myers says the federal government's stimulus programs aimed at small businesses have fallen far short of the need, and that's why he wants Indiana to create a state-run program to support those businesses.
especially the hard hit businesses, many of them minority owned, veteran owned, woman owned, and disability owned businesses, because they need help with payroll, all of them, operational expenses, and working capital.
Myers says the program would be paid for through some federal funding and state dollars, which he says the legislature should get to work on finding.
To look deeply within the current revenues, current expenditures, to identify new priorities, new targets.
Myers says the amount of funding would be a big number that's likely to grow.
John Schwanes, does this proposal, or at least parts of it, feel a little half-formed?
Well, in his defense, I suppose everything related to COVID-19 is half-formed in terms of the response, because it is unprecedented. We haven't dealt with these sorts of things before. Some of the components are fairly predictable. You mentioned a few, but this whole notion of getting money flowing to businesses, and not only that, but getting Hoosiers, giving them incentives to frequent small Hoosier businesses, to give incentives for small Hoosier businesses to produce PPE for healthcare providers, to set up a program where Hoosiers could, who are homebound, could tap the resources of restaurants to the benefit of those restaurants. These are all things designed to help Hoosiers businesses, those small mom and pops that we always hear so much about and truly are the backbone of the economy in our state. So it'd be great to be able to say, here's how I would, how much it would cost, and here's how I would specifically pay for it. But that's not very realistic, because who knows how they're going to pay for it. The only thing that's probably certain is that it would be anything that happens will be a mix of state and federal dollars. And I'm sure that the bulk of that will be federal dollars.
Yeah, Nikki, I talked a little bit more with the Myers campaign this morning about this, and they identified that some of the CARES Act money they would that is coming to the state and local governments, they would direct some of that into these programs. And they also pointed out that they would spend money out of the rainy day fund, the state budget reserves. But we're about to, at least one, at the state budget reserve level, we're about to face a really sharp decline in state revenues. So they're going to have to spend some of that money just to keep the lights on in state and local government. So will there really be money like from that fund available for programs like this?
Yeah, it's easy to say just use the rainy day fund, but you know, we pushed taxes out. So just to literally close the books, not in deficit, is going to take a huge amount of that rainy day fund. I'm not saying there isn't things that the state could be doing for small business. And the governor did announce a small thing today where he's creating a program in which businesses with less than 100 employees can use this program to procure PPE for their workers to try to keep them safe.
Now, and Delaney, to give credit here to Woody Myers, we haven't really seen a lot from the Holcomb administration so far on the sort of support programs for small businesses. Right now, it's really been relying on whatever the federal government has been able to produce, right?
That's right, and I don't really have an awful lot of confidence. When Governor Holcomb convenes a group of his contributors around the table, which is what he's assembled to decide how the state's going to help, it doesn't give a cross-section of the population. It means that these guys who are by and large wealthy and by and large contributors of his can decide which among them or which of their friends need the money. And it's been going, as we've seen in the national press, to entities that have significant resources and more than 500 employees. And those concerns are really felt by, as John mentions, the mom and pop, the donut shop, the cafeteria or whatever. They're the ones that are hurting, and they're not getting the funds any more than those people who have been laid off are getting the funds. You know, we spent since 2010 restricting access to unemployment compensation in the name of fraud, just like we do with voting, okay? And as a consequence of that, we have 18% of our Hoosiers unemployed, and we're only putting out workers' compensation to 8% of them, okay? Something is wrong, and what's wrong is that the state has spent so much time trying to take money away from people who need it that now that everybody recognizes that need, we're not in we don't have the capacity to do it, and that's pretty darn worrisome.
Mike, there's been, I'd say, varying levels of success with the federal small business support programs that we've seen so far around COVID relief. Is the state even going to be able to, and does it need to, step up on its own to help some Hoosier small businesses?
I think the state can help facilitate some of these federal dollars that are coming into the state. The idea that we are the assumption going forward has got, for the legislature and anybody working in state government, has got to be that there is no surplus, that the hole that is being created by deferring Q1 taxes, deferring 2019 taxes to the state, and being able to cash flow to the end of the year in a way that, where the state at best breaks even, is going to be very difficult. There's not a lot of money to find in this budget. Dr. Myers mentioned the legislature reconvening to find the money. There isn't money to find. The legislature's biggest challenge next year is going to be managing a deficit. It's not going to be, what do we do with all this money? And so that's the reason the federal government has had to step up, is because no state is in that position. And that's why they've had to pass trillions of dollars in relief to try to cash flow and finance the economy so that it doesn't break over the long period. One of the biggest challenges always with that is, Ann's right, people that shouldn't get this money are getting it. Senator Braun, I think, stepped up this week and said Notre Dame should return the money, the $5.7 million they were given, and use some of their $3.3 billion cash reserve. So there's examples like that we're gonna continue to see, that publicly traded companies and companies that are financially healthy continue to receive money they shouldn't. It should have gone to small businesses that are just trying to cash flow payroll for 30 or 60 days.
And Hallador in Terre Haute, who not only got $10 million, but also a small number
of companies here in the state that are on that list. All right. Well, roughly 100 cars circled the Westville Correctional Facility this week in Indiana in protest of what they say are dangerous health conditions regarding COVID-19 within the prison. WVPE's Anna Caroline Caruso was at the demonstration.
Protesters drove around the state prison for 2 hours in cars covered with signs which read, "Inmate Lives Matter" and "Prison Sentence, Not Death Sentence." They silently prayed for the inmates inside where there's a COVID-19 outbreak. Angela Grable is a mentor for one of the Westville inmates and organized the protest. She received letters from prisoners writing about the poor conditions.
We just really want to get the truth out about what is going on inside of Westville, what has been going on inside of Westville for many, many years. The facilities have always been awful, so then you add COVID to that and it was just a disaster.
Grable says there's no hot water, prisoners are refused medical attention, and masks and hand sanitizer are being taken away. In an email, an IDOC official said each offender has been given 2 masks and are encouraged to wear them.
Nikki Kelly, state officials have been asked so many times about Department of Correction issues that those of us who cover the State House, have actually put it on the little bingo cards we created for ourselves. But the state has really just continued giving the same answer every time, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're sticking with it. They say they're following some CDC guidelines for prison settings. They say that all inmates have masks and they're trying to do the best they can with it. Just to be clear, we have, I think, 346 offenders positive right now, and 150 of them are at Westville, and we've had 7 deaths. So it is a serious issue, but I do think they're very nervous about letting anyone out that could then reoffend, and it would be a very negative story.
Ann Delaney, I want to ask you about that point exactly. Obviously, there's got to be some worry about letting folks out and them reoffending. But also, officials this week talked about, in some cases, if they wanted to let folks out, they wouldn't necessarily have somewhere to go. Has that got to be part of the math here, essentially?
I don't think so. I mean, there are places that they can go that they won't be in such close quarters. You know, the people that we put there for good reason, okay? But as somebody pointed out, we didn't give them a death sentence. And if you have elderly, as you do, inmates, you have people nearing the end of their sentences, those are the types of people that can be released early and should be. And, you know, frankly, I used to do sex offense cases in another life, and I never had an offender over 35. So if you get somebody that's over that, the chances of it reoccurring for a rape or a vicious sexual assault are very slim. And those statistics are there. They can make evaluations on who is a good risk and who isn't. But I don't think that history is going to look kindly on an administration that allows people to be cooped up in situations where, instead of just taking their liberty, we're taking their lives.
Mike, is there a situation where the governor and the state needs to start letting some folks out of these facilities?
Remember, this is a state correctional facility. You have to be a level five. You have to commit a level five felony at a minimum to be put into one of these facilities. If you have an elderly person who's a sex offender, that person is there for a very good reason and should not be released. Now, look, it is tragic in a public health emergency that you have limited resources and you have to prioritize. And certainly in these closed quarters, they've got to manage an outbreak before it overwhelms the facility. And I think the Department of Correction has done a good job of that. And we'll need to continue to do that. Because the idea that we just open the doors and let some part of this population that committed a minimum.
You can make intelligent.
All right. That's unfortunately Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.